This is Ralph Carhart, the author of The Hall Ball, and you are listening to Baseball and Barbecue.
From the studios of Baseball and BBQ on Long Island, New York. This is episode number 144 of Baseball and BBQ. I'm Jeff Cohen, here with my co-host, the fascinating Leonard Hollywood Aberman. Welcome to our show, Leonard.
Well, I thought I was listening to a professional announcer. That was an intro to beat all intros. Jeff, episode 144. Excited to be here. Hollywood is in the house.
Yes.
Can I say that? Can I say is in the house, or is that just, does that show that I'm just an old man? I don't know. Let me just tell you guys before we get to our guests that BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, the NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting, props, and futures. Head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join today and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BLEAV50. That's BLEAV50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. Jeff, we've got a great episode. We start with none other than Justin Sherman of Just In Time Baseball. Jeff, Justin has found a way to give the youths, as we like to say, of America.
What'd you say?
The youths. The youths. The youths.
What's a youth?
He's if we had 1,000 Justin Shermans, then we know that the game of baseball would be played well, would thrive, because Justin is really taking his baseball academy. He's doing it the right way. You guys, I think you're really going to enjoy hearing from Justin Sherman. And then, Jeff, after Justin, we're going to go in a little bit of a different direction.
Oh, we are.
Well, we're going to have on Jerry Belcastro. Who is Jerry Belcastro, you might ask? Well, he has started the Pizza Cook-Off Association. Pizza and barbecue, I feel they go hand in hand, because, you know, everybody now with their outdoor ovens, whether it's on a Big Green Egg, whether it's getting an Uni or all these other brands of pizza ovens, outdoor cooking of pizza is great. You take your Weber and you oil the dough up a little bit. You can, well, there are ways to do it that you can, you could put foil underneath it. You're going to get the nice char marks on the dough. Pizza on the grill, it's quick and it's so good. It really is. So we've got Jerry Belcastro. So let's start with you giving out our contact information, and then we take it from there.
All righty. You can email us, baseballandbbq@gmail.com. Leave us a voicemail. Our phone number is 516-855-8214. Tweet us. We're on the Twitter. We're on the Twitterverse, as they say. Baseball at Baseball and BBQ. Leave a comment on our Facebook page, Baseball and BBQ. We're on Instagram, believe it or not. Baseball and Barbecue, with barbecues all spelled out. And our website is www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. And please subscribe and rate and
review us. Thank you.
And with that, here's Justin Sherman with Just in Time Baseball.
It takes a special person to train and work with, as in my cousin Vinny, the Utes. And we are lucky that we have such a person on with us. He is the founder, owner, president, whatever title you want to give him, of Just in Time Baseball, which is a baseball youth training school, or what we're going to speak to him exactly about what it is and the great things that he does for, seriously, for the children. And his name is Justin Sherman. He is from Just in Time Baseball. And Justin, we are so excited to welcome you to Baseball and Barbecue.
Well, look, Jeff and Leonard, I really appreciate you having me on. And I've been really doing some homework on the podcast, and it's just so entertaining and so great. I mean, anything to talk baseball and obviously the youth level is special to me. So I really appreciate you having me on. Very much so.
Well, we're glad you're here. And before Leonard starts asking his question, I've been doing some research on you, and you have quite the compelling story to how you got started in Just in Time Baseball. Would you mind sharing it with us?
Sure. So basically, I've been doing private lessons, training, coaching since it's almost 10 years ago already. I can't believe I'm even saying that. So actually training one-on-one lessons 10 years. It's probably by the end of the year, it'd be 10 years. So 10 years. But really, it started to kind of take off. And, you know, 2 years ago, you know, I brought on one employee right before the pandemic. It really wasn't even Just in Time Baseball. It was really just Justin Sherman. And I would do private lessons, just typical working with kids in the neighborhood. One lesson became two lessons, three lessons. And it really, you know, I really built up a clientele. But right before the pandemic, I brought on my first real employee, which is a big step for me in my entrepreneurial career. But then obviously COVID hit, changed the world forever. Like we all know about the Zoom world has, as we're doing this right now. I basically said, you know what? I want to keep continuing to give a service to the kids that I have. Let's do a physical education class. And I'm really jumping all over here, but this is pretty much a summation of it. So I started a phys ed class. I also have my master's on top of this in physical education. So I figured a baseball-ish phys ed class, because like kids were not getting phys ed. You know, there's a difference between, and I talk about this with my coaches and other phys ed peers. It's not just a gym teacher. It's a physical education, you know, physical education teacher. So during the pandemic, I started doing this Zoom, and I just threw it out there, made it very inexpensive so I could just get as many kids as possible and just get as many kids involved. And it just evolved. And I promise you, there's a reasoning dimension in this here. But it just evolved into, you know, I had kids from Colorado, Florida, Chicago, literally on a Zoom. We made News 12 here in Westchester, and it caught, like, it was just crazy. It just caught on fire. And then parents, obviously, like I'm sure we can all attest here, get kind of sick of the Zoom. They're like, look, come to our backyard. I'll put the group together. I have, you know, a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. Can you do like a backyard baseball to you kind of program? I said, okay, sure. Never really did that. We really did one-on-ones. This was like June 2020. One group became two groups, three groups, four. All of a sudden I have 30 groups and I'm, you know, doing six, seven groups by myself. I'm like, this is not just like Justin Sherman anymore. This is a company. So the inception was formed of Just in Time Baseball. And really our focus, as I really saw throughout that pandemic, is the forgotten age really is the 4, 5, 6, and 7-year-olds. And I'm sure we're going to dive into it, but I saw the niche. I love it. Enjoy it. They really are the forgotten age. And I took my physical education background and made this not just a throwing, you know, teaching how to throw a ball, but an educational company through the game of baseball. I call us a youth development company. So now fast forward 2 years, we have 17 coaches and we're in 11 different little leagues and branching out into other states. Wow. Through a ton of hard work and passion and diligency and high standards. So it's been great and we're doing some very exciting things and I look forward to the growth and helping as many kids as possible.
Now there are other camps, schools, training. What is it that is different about yours? I'm kind of serving up a softball here because I know that you're different, but for anyone who doesn't know, which probably most of our listeners, what makes you different?
So, and I appreciate that question. And again, it's like in Shark Tank, like what makes you proprietary? And I think about that every day, by the way, always. I'm always thinking what makes us different? What else? Like that, the quote, like what else could we do? And what else could we do differently than other people? That's not necessarily, sometimes different is not good, but I really, going back to what I talked about earlier, is truly, I think the ages that we work with, there really are not many companies or many that I even know, and I know a lot of them, that specialize in these rookie programs, which I'll dive into, like 4, 5, 6, and 7, they really, I hear like pro level guys that have coached at a high level that say, you know, oh, I just don't work with that age. I have no patience. But like, or another quote would be, oh yeah, you know, it's like babysitting. It's not like babysitting. It is not. If you look at it in a different perspective, you are molding these children. You are the base. You have them as clay. Like if you talk as like a parent, you are in charge of their development and potentially them continuing to play baseball. So, and I say this to my company, to our staff all the time, like we have a vital role here in their development and passion for their, you know, for the game, because ultimately that's what it's about. Like if they want to continue to play and love the game, that's number one. It's a vital thing. And I think it is truly forgotten and not appreciated enough. So I think what makes us proprietary is our dominance at the youth level.
May I say that you said something that really is interesting. It's really, and I might be wrong here, so correct me if I'm wrong, but it's really not a training type of thing. It's more of youth development. But I know what training is. I mean, I have my son got a little older. We went to training, and that got, you know, that got the one-on-one training got a little pricey, you know, with the one-on-one people. But, you know, when you get them at a younger level and a development, that's where you make an impact.
Totally. And again, I'll tell this to any parent. Like I get many phone calls from parents that are like, you know, he or she is really a beginner. Like, is that okay? I'm like, we welcome that and want that. Like I'll ask a kid who here's ever played baseball. When they raise their hand, that's exciting to me. Who has not played baseball and they raise their hand. That's an exciting thing for me. And I tell this to our company, like that is an opportunity to make an impression on a child. So again, and I also tell our parents that sign up, it's not a cost, it's an investment. Like we are an educational company. Like I'm very adamant about that. And also we're not just rewarding baseball skills and softball skills, we're rewarding great choices. So I'm sure you'll get a kick out of it. Like we did we did two rookie programs. And I'll dive into what a rookie program is, but we do these rookie programs and we give out baseball and Pokemon cards. Why? Not for a kid hitting a home run, but for making good choices. So what's a good choice? Not picking dirt. A good choice is being a great teammate, making good eye contact, hustling. Those are all measurable things that not necessarily has to be the kid hit a home run. And I think by highlighting that and making it fun, you will inspire more kids.
So Justin, what's the age range that you work with?
So I guess I'll dive into what our dominant program is right now. So our age bracket is really 4 through, I'd say, 12 years old. You know, we do work with 13, 14 year olds. Look, I coached in college. A lot of my coaches coached at a high level. But again, I like to stay in the range of ages 4 through 12 years old. I don't want to get too wide. I'd rather dominate in that age bracket. We do these rookie programs where we will go into a league or a rec department and we are a third party solution. So we provide a just-in-time rookie program. We just did two brand new today, brand new. We had one last year. We have 11 this year, this summer. we go in, we do instruction with each child. Each child gets a name tag because the sweetest word in anyone's vocabulary is their name. I don't understand how in these big groups they don't have that. So if they don't remember the kid's name, that's the coach's fault. Use a name tag. So we give them name tags. We do instruction. We go over the rules, one skill per session. And then we break them up into age/experience level, and they do instructional gameplay. And these kids are walking around at 4 years old with a just-in-time jersey. And it's just, it's fantastic. It's adorable. It's adorable. And they really get so much out of it. So much out of it. Then we obviously end with closure. So that's been a great thing. We literally are in, we're all over Westchester County, and we just got into Norwalk, Connecticut. We could say we're actually getting into other states.
That's excellent. Just for everybody to know, you can check out Justin Sherman's website at justintimebaseball.com. And I also encourage you to go to his YouTube page. Lots of great short videos, I would say, and where you give messages to parents and you show some skills, which I thought was terrific because, you know, it really grabs everybody's attention.
Yes. And again, we're building, I'm working on an even bigger play as far as to get more content because again, another avenue of our company, and I guess this is more of a Justin Sherman within Justin Time Baseball, but eventually it will be a Justin Time thing, is a new area is I'm actually being asked to speak to parent coaches on how to run practices and how to keep the kids organized. That has become a huge niche. I did our first this March, I did a national coaches convention, basically on Zoom. It was all on Zoom. We had 60 parents. I had parents from Chicago, Florida. And again, it's not a matter of like, okay, this is a good drill for launch angle. No, it's how do you manage the children? That's what also I believe with Justin Time Baseball and the phys ed background. Like, I don't care what level you played at. If you don't know how to communicate with a six-year-old and manage children, it does not matter. Meaning for ages at least 4 through 7.
You know, one of the videos I kind of enjoyed, and it's less than 30 seconds, is telling them how to catch with the alligator mouth instead of the hippo mouth that you just put up. I thought that was very cute.
Yes, yes. And again, cues. Like, for any parent or any youth coach just listening, again, anything I'm saying is just things that I've learned that worked. We're all learning. We're all students. I'm a student. We're all students. But cues are a major thing, you know, and I know a lot of coaches know that, but, you know, simply that's just a great reminder not to scoot, you know, have a cradle arms when you're catching a ball, as opposed to having strong hands when they're catching a baseball. Yeah, 100%. Like cues. We're big on cues.
Justin, let me lob another one over the plate.
I love that.
Running this baseball clinic and all this, you must have played, I'm assuming you at least must have been a high minor leaguer, maybe in the majors. I mean, you had to have been a major league player, right?
So I did not play that level. I don't know if the softball question, if that was the softball answer.
Oh, that was, no, I, because I knew the answer, okay. But I love the fact that I heard you talking about it somewhere else, and I love the fact that you mentioned the chip, and I would really appreciate you getting into all that.
In high school, okay, first of all, in high school, I didn't even make my junior varsity baseball team. I give that story to a lot of people, but I only say it not to brag or whatever. I say it to a child because there's a lot of situations where a kid will not make a high school baseball team, let's say freshman or modified, and they give up. But I just said, you know what? I was actually going to play golf, which I still love playing golf. But I said, you know what? I need to increase my effort and actions, like just straight, no crazy schmancy, fancy schmancy, just increase activity to hit the target. I think that's an any, you know, you talk entrepreneurship, baseball, athletics, increase activity to hit a target, not lower the target. I just said, I got to work harder, straight up. I didn't work as hard as I could. And I made the varsity baseball team. For me, I have a soft spot for that child that is maybe not like, you know, the first round draft pick or high, you know, Division I baseball player. Whatever, I was not that kid. And that's what I really also helped me inspire this for this company. Most of the kids we see in our company, probably won't make it past sixth grade to play baseball. You know, if they do, wonderful. But as far as even just skill wise, I have a soft spot for that child that just loves the game and wants to develop their skills and build their confidence. So I played at Purchase College, a great art music school, and now has become a pretty solid Division III baseball school in the Northeast. And I actually coached there as well. I did coach there as well. So I coached there in college and played there, and it was a great experience. But yeah, to answer your question, no, I was not. I just I don't even know how to say it, but basically I barely made the varsity team. It
was by the skin of your teeth.
Exactly. There we go. I'm having a lag here. So yeah, by the skin of my teeth, I mean, I barely made it. So, but I made it, and then the rest is history. I just kept grinding. So I always have a soft spot for that child because a lot of kids are in that spot. More kids are in that spot than playing high level baseball.
And then what do you say to the kid that comes in? They say, you know, they just want to hit home runs, and they think that I would hope that at 4 and 5, they're not, but 12, 13, whatever they watch ESPN, they've got their favorite players, and they come in and they think that they're just, launch angle and all the things that I know make Jeff angry about the current state of the game.
So Jeff and Leonard, who invented launch angle? Cause I could tell you who invented it. Cause the word launch angle, I know, cause I have that old school mentality, not to say, it's beautiful. Launch angle was Ted Williams.
Ted Williams. Yeah. That's why
he said swing slightly up. That's what it is. I'm assuming you both read The Science of Hitting, but, or maybe not. That's his legendary book. But it was always swing slightly up. So you could call it we could call it whatever it is, but that is launch angle, right? It's
okay.
It's Ted Williams. He was who was my favorite hitter of all time. I'd love to know both yours. But basically, yeah, the way I look at it is when I work with a kid who's a little bit older, where I'll do like a one-on-one session, I'll just say, look, Johnny, how many home runs do you have over the fence? And they'll most likely say either one or zero. I said, so how many line drives do you have? A lot. I said, why don't we just dominate at hitting line drives and the ball eventually will get over the fence. Be a good hitter first. I really, truly believe focus on your strengths, just like anything in life. It's corny as it sounds, but I didn't hit my first home. I hit more home runs in college than I did in Little League by just staying within my approach. I think that's a very important thing. That could be a whole nother podcast, but staying within the approach, I think that's very important for a coach to reiterate to a child.
Let me ask you this. As a coach, each kid has their own, I guess, batting style, batting stance. I know when I was a kid, my coaches taught the kids to hit the same way. But everybody's different. How do you approach it?
I love this question. I'm also the same way. I'm very loose, but I have kind of like I tell our coaches, like, I'm not going to tell you what to teach, but I do have some principles that I like to stay by. I mean, as long as you're athletic, loose, and hands are close to the hitting slot, meaning like kind of by your ear, you go for it, whatever you think is comfortable. I am not the way, because every hitter is different. Every hitter is different, clearly, obviously. I just think as long as the principles of them being athletic and their hands being near the hitting slot by the launch, because you look at a guy like Anthony Rizzo, who has his hands by his belly button, who's fantastic. And then you have a hitter like, Stanton. They both have to be in, they're both in a pretty similar launch position. So as long as they're near the launch position in an athletic lower half position, I'm fine with it. So to answer your question, I'm not too picky, but I am picky about the athletic position. I say like guarding someone in basketball. I actually call it to the little guys. I call it a UAP, which is a universal athletic position. So instead of me saying freeze, I say UAP to reinforce that athletic position. So when I'm working on batting stance, I say, okay, UAP, listen to your thumb. So obviously it's some kids are going to have it a little lower, a little higher, but it's pretty much near their ear, near the launch position. Those are my principles.
Now you have an indoor facility for during the winter. What happens?
So what we do is from March to November, we're bouncing around different fields. We partner with a lot of, obviously, little leagues and rec departments. But when we get into the winter, we really get more towards like after Christmas, holiday, Hanukkah break, New Year's. We rent many facilities. So I am in the process of potentially getting a permanent home, but we have great partnerships with great facilities where they basically just give it to us. So like, you know, we'll use gymnasiums, especially for the little kids. Like if they're 4 or 5 years old, a gymnasium with softy balls and tennis balls, we do. So a combination of gymnasiums, indoor facilities, and different rec departments. That's how we juggle it for now. That could very well change.
At age 4, the kids are throwing curveballs. Is that what I'm hearing?
No, definitely. I'd love to get your thoughts on it, but I mean, I don't know why that's such a subject in the youth. It really is a topic at the youth level about curveballs. I'm such a fan of, and I think I'm segueing here, but for good topic. I'd rather teach a changeup. Like I'll tell a 9-year-old, let's be amazing with a changeup. I mean, there's zero pressure on the elbow. I don't understand the rush to have a curveball. How about spotting your fastball and hitting your location? Yeah, spotting and hitting your locations and having a great changeup. I'd rather see that than a curveball till their arm develops.
I was going to ask a different question, but now I'm going to go into this one. When my kid was playing, and he's now 21, but he was playing travel ball when he was, you know, 14 to 18, whatever. This coaches, and he was not a pitcher, but these coaches always had a pitch count on the pitchers. Is the actual pitch count important, or is it the stress on the type of pitches that are more important?
So there's a great pitching coach. One of the most well-known throwing mechanic. I'm sure you heard the name Tom House.
Mm-hmm. Tom House.
And he even talks about it. I think it's a combination of everything. It's a culmination. It also depends on the child. Depends on the mechanics. You know, it really depends on their mechanics and their growth and where they're at physically. So I don't know if there's an exact science to it, but I would say great mechanics alleviate a lot of that. Like if a kid has great, easy, smooth mechanics and he, you know, looks effortless after, let's just say, because the pitch limit is 85, I believe, from 9 to 11 years old in Little League official rules. I've seen a kid throwing at right at 85 that looks like he just got on the mound. And then I'll see a kid throwing at 20 pitches that has choppy mechanics that, you know, we might want to pull him after 30. Of his mechanics. So I think it's really, there's no one cookie cutter answer. I think it's a culmination of mechanics, you know, maybe prior workload, like if a kid's throwing a lot in the backyard and then he gets on the mound later, like it really depends. It's a culmination. I think it's not a cookie cutter answer.
How many years have you been doing this now?
9 years. So basically we're pretty much 10 years. I'm going to be 31 in November. So I've been doing it since I'm 21.
You ever have a kid who just, you're like, wow, like you could see the pure talent and you just, you know what's going to be? Or
so I'll tell you a funny one, you know, a crazy one. So basically I used to work at this summer camp and it was a great camp in New Rochelle. And I saw this one child raw, like extremely raw. And, you know, I work with him just on the side during the camp. And I'm like, this kid is raw. I mean, like he was a little over the place on the mound. He wasn't throwing like super unbelievably fast, but he was throwing fast, super quick speed, but just everything he did was just like electric. It just looked different. Fast forward, he was playing high school baseball in New Rochelle, made the New Rochelle high school team. All of a sudden I see his miles go up. Played at Lemoyne College, Division II, I believe, which is a solid school. They're not like a powerhouse, but a solid school. And all of a sudden, I see the kid get drafted by the Washington Nationals. He's in the rotation. That's Josiah Gray. Do you know that name?
Yeah.
So I actually coached him. I could say I coached him for briefly, and all of a sudden I see this kid in the big leagues as the number two starter for the Nationals right now. So wow. he was the guy I would say that was like, oh my goodness, this kid, he's raw. He was raw, but he was like, there was something about him, and clearly he's now a big leaguer, a legit.
That's amazing. I was going to say, what was it? Mariano Rivera. Cause he's from New Rochelle, I believe, or he lives there now or something.
He just built his church in New Rochelle. Yeah. I used to play against his son. He was a stud, and he got drafted by the Nationals ironically as well.
Wow. Wow.
So, and he's a, yeah, he's new row, and he's very active in the community. Very active. Great guy. Met him multiple times.
On your website, you have just-in-time services. So you give private lessons, you make your own group. There's one thing here that really caught my eye, which I believe a lot of Little League coaches probably use your services, is parent coaching instruction. Could you tell us about that? Because I know some of the coaches I've seen could use that.
No doubt about it. So again, I really get such a thrill out of doing that. So I did it. Before the pandemic, I would go into, I was very fortunate to be asked to go to two little leagues. One little league, it was a smaller turnout, but still 15 coaches, parents. And it was like T-ball and rookie ball levels. And again, I taught them. I said, listen, I can give you all the drills in the world here. Let me tell you how to manage a group. And I say this to our just-in-time staff, like, partner and individual activities, and I believe this is going to answer your question. Partner and individual activities save a youth practice. So typically when I'm coming into these little leagues and speaking to these parent coaches, because now I'm doing it all over New York and across the country on Zoom. It's taken a life of its own. So I will, yes, talk about drills, but managing children, and what do you do if you're by yourself? So most of these parents, they're, God bless all of them, God bless any parent coach, youth, they are the underbelly of youth sports, right? We don't want to abolish parents. We want to work in unison with them. So basically, we'll go in, they're getting off a train from Manhattan, they got the half tied off, you know, they're just trying to rush off the train and start helping out their son and their, you know, just be a part of the community and help out. God bless them. What do? One coach, one parent, know nothing about baseball. Let's just say they have no knowledge of baseball. What do? The biggest thing I look at to keep the kids engaged and having fun is no standing around. And I tell every parent, the age of the child should be the duration of the drill. So if they're 5 and 6 years old, any drill you're going to do, I don't care what it is, self-catch, hitting, it should be 5 minutes. They're 5, it should be 5 minutes. Because standing around is the devil in a youth baseball practice, which I know you both know that. So I always harp on, when I speak to parent coaches, on individual and partner activities. Like if I'll have one of our coaches work with 30 kids, because I know it's individual. It's either like, if instead of them playing catch with each other, how about self-catch? Let's just say ages 4 through 7. I'd rather see a kid by themselves throw a ball up to themselves, get more repetition, as opposed to at the five-year-old level, a five-year-old having a catch. Depends on the experience level, but I'm a huge fan on individual and partner activities for parent coaches. I hope that answers your question.
I happen to see that you're going to have Thomas Nito, who is a New York Met. So, and you're going to have him as the end of summer classic. I think Jeff might enroll in that.
You guys are more than welcome to come aboard. And
thank you. But what I'm curious about, and I see that, and I think it's terrific, is the process. How do you go about, you've got Mets and Yankees in this town. And so now you're bringing in a Met. Maybe the Mets come cheaper. I don't know. Yankees are very expensive, but I don't know how that works. I'm very curious how, and then do you go, the second part is then, okay, you're going to get a Met and you go to the Mets, and I don't know. Do you have to pay for that? Do they volunteer? Is there a level, like you get a Thomas Nito because Alonso is too expensive? I have no idea, but I'm very curious.
So here's what I could say without, because there's some I got to walk on eggshells here.
Ah, got it.
Put it this way. All I can say, he's coming. I know various people that helped me get him. And
perfect.
Yes, he's not doing it as a charity, which mm-hmm. is totally fine. We're in right. a, this is America.
Of course.
But he does, I did speak to his people and he doesn't just do it, mm-hmm. Which, you know, you could take that with a grain of salt. He knows kind of where our company is, which I was flattered. As far as he actually wanted to get a lot of information about what we're doing before just stepping on the field. Because obviously, forgetting the monetary, like he's representing himself and his values, so they align. Mm-hmm. So I'm walking on eggshells here trying to be politically correct.
No, you know what? You don't need to.
He's coming in.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
Oh, no.
I didn't, at all. But I'm just curious how something like that happens. But I think it's great that it does happen. The kids love it. I mean, look, adults love it. I mean, you know.
Here's my thought process. And this is the honest truth. So, like, he's coming in and I'm doing this for a reason, because during the pandemic, you know, as we were coming out of the pandemic, it was very hard to get kids together. Obviously social distance and whatever. I actually started my own league this winter. I called it the Just In Time Winter Rookie League. I rented one of the biggest domes in the Northeast and I got 65 kids ages 4, 5, 6, and 7 years old to play baseball together. These little peanuts walking around this huge dome. It was crazy. So my whole thought process is not only the monetary, just like getting the big picture, getting kids together during this, you know, kids went to sleepaway. You know, it looks like, knock on wood, things are pretty much getting back to normal. I want to do almost as like a thank you to my kids and parents. Cause I feel like every kid that signs up with us is a family member. Really, truly. That's the way I look at it. And I think that's what makes this grow quicker. Cause I truly want to, they're like family. In a nutshell, my idea for this was to make it special just for the kids. Like, They've been going through craziness the last 2 years. So honest truth, I'm bringing in a Met. It's something different. There's nothing like it in Westchester, and it's for the kids. So everything comes down to that. And that was my thought process to do this. And yeah, his values align, I believe, as I hope so. And God willing, I'm saying this now, I hope he's still a New York Met catcher at that time. I think he totally will be. He's a great defensive catcher. And I heard he really is into like the youth level. So it was a great fit.
Yeah, that's great that he's doing it. It is. It really is.
Justin, I have another question. It might be a little dark if you don't mind, but I, you know, I know we've heard these stories in youth baseball in little leagues, how parents get a little obnoxious sometimes.
No way.
Little bit.
Say it ain't so.
And I have a philosophy when my kid was playing. I always said, let players play, let coaches coach, let umpires umpire, let spectators spectate. What do you do when these parents get, you know, out of hand at these little league games?
So I deal with it all the time. I deal with it all the time. Those are their babies. You get it because you have kids. Empathetically, they're passionate about wanting their child to succeed. And obviously a lot of the times they go overboard. I think it's very important and this is why I say work in unison. Day one, like when I'm coaching, because what we also do a part of this service, which really should frankly be on the website, but we'll go into other little league teams and coach their teams or run their practices with the parent coaches. So that's another part of our service. So when we walk into these practices and to these teams and organizations, like day one, lay down, I don't want to say lay down the law, but lay down your expectations. And excuse me, I almost come up with like a mini agreement. Like, you agree to this. This is an agreement. And also, like, if you're telling a parent had a quote unquote pro coach or a just-in-time coach to coach, I would say to any parent, I wouldn't walk into your office until you had to, you know, place a trade or whatever it is, or whatever you're doing. It's the same thing. That's our office. Like, this is what we do. Let us do our job. So I think just being open, you know, honest communication. Not to say that settles it, but it's a real thing. It's definitely a real thing. It's something that needs to be continuously hammered, the message of kids are kids. No one's trying to fail ever on a baseball field or just in general. And like an umpire is truly, I'd be shocked, but an umpire is not in it for any specific team. Like they're just there for the kids and for the game and for the overall experience. But to answer your question, it's definitely a subject now. It's as prevalent now as ever. It's actually getting worse. You know, I think it takes someone that really cares about the youth level to really instill, like, hammer home the message. Let kids play fun, positive, learning, fun, positive. Hope that answers it.
Yeah, and you know, Jeff's right, of course, about the spectators. But I remember when my son was in Little League, there was a coach that he had. And this coach would kind of get out of hand and start to swear, you know, if something didn't go right on the field or if a player and the parents, it was very uncomfortable because, you know, obviously they're volunteers and we're not doing it. You know, we're not volunteering, but at the same time, the kids, even, you know, they would say, you know, why did so-and-so say that bad word? And it's not just sometimes the coaches, they volunteer and which is great, but I think they need the training too.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And I say it's actually a great segue because when I go into these parent coaching seminars, like when I'll go into a Little League, I'll ask the parents, why are you coaching? Why are you coaching? Because, and like I say it to our just-in-time staff, why are you coaching? I constantly ask that. And it's very important when you feel that urge to get out of hand or lose your control, because it's about control. Go back to your why. So if you have a 6-year-old, 7-year-old playing baseball and they're missing a ball and you're yelling at them, and you need to show empathy and understand, like, if I was that child, would I perform better if I had a grown man yelling at me from the stands? Empathy and straight up just going back to your why. Like, okay, I got to understand this is about the kids and about the game. It's not about you. It's about the kids. So I asked the parent coaches, why are you doing it? Just to put things in perspective. You know, if you're trying to win championships at the 7-year-old level, you're not doing it for the right reasons. It's about the big picture stuff.
Yeah. I have to tell you that I have somebody that a friend of mine who I bowl with. People know I'm a bowler because the name Hollywood is, and he is a fantastic coach, and he will get parents will just, he'll show me things that he, you know, as we're bowling, he'll get texts and things from parents and just the compliments that he receives and what he does and the amount of hours that he puts in. He'll change his work schedule just so he can coach the kids. And when I say change his schedule, he's able to do this with his job, but he'll go on graveyard shift during the season just so he's available to coach the kids.
Wow.
The dedication from some of these coaches and I'm sure your staff to work with the children is to be highly commended. It really is. And
you have to. And again, it's beyond, listen, money is important, but you gotta love working with kids. You have to. And that's why, like, when I interview coaches, I'm like, so why do you want to do this? Why do you want to work with just-in-time baseball? Is it just to get a paycheck? Because if that's what you want to do, you know, yeah, money's important. We're on an economic planet. Don't get me wrong. And it's important, but you gotta love working with kids. You gotta. And again, it's not a matter of, I like baseball. Like, just because you like baseball, but you gotta love and be patient. Patience is the biggest thing for a youth coach. I really believe so. Patience. But, you know, I always ask why, because you got to love it. You have to love it.
Well, now we're going to segue because it has been a pleasure. We've loved speaking with you. You definitely, we want to give you every opportunity to plug your Facebook page, your business, your, because I think that it's, parents are looking for guidance for their kids. They're, if a parent wants to put their kids in a program, they're going to do it. But putting them in the right program is so important. And I think that with you, that is the right program. So please take, you know, do everything you right now, plug away.
Well, I appreciate it. Again, I really appreciate the opportunity. Like I said earlier, yeah, look, if you want to follow us on YouTube, Just In Time Baseball, Instagram, Just In Time. We're very big on Instagram. We have over 5,000 followers and growing. Again, specializing in youth drills for parent coaches, youth coaches, Just In Time Baseball, Twitter, getting a lot of Twitter stuff. Also LinkedIn, Justin Sherman. I'll post, like, I'll write articles on, like, different drills and organizational principles for youth coaches. So the website, Just In Time Baseball, and definitely just feel free to reach out to me straight up. Just you can email me at coachjustin@justintimebaseball.com. I can answer any questions. If you're a youth coach, parent, kid, whatever, I'm here to help. So I appreciate it.
Well, we greatly appreciate having you on. Justin, it's been a pleasure. And thank you very much for coming on Baseball and Barbecue.
And we would like to thank Justin Sherman for coming on the show. He's doing a great thing for the youths of America. You know, getting involved at baseball at a very young age, teaching him the right way. What do you think, Len?
If I had taken his courses and he had been around when I was a kid, I'd probably be playing Major League Baseball right now. Okay, maybe not.
Maybe not.
Jeff, I want to talk to you about something.
Uh-oh, what'd I do?
No, it's not an uh-oh. I probably did make that too doom and gloomy, didn't I?
What did I do?
No, the Hall of Fame, the ceremony.
Hall of Fame, yes.
It happened.
Last week.
Yeah. We may end up going all over the place with this, but let's congratulate
Why should that be different?
Exactly. Let's congratulate some of our former guests. First of all, Irene Hodges, yeah, her father.
Gave a wonderful speech, yes, at, yeah, the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. Gil Hodges, finally, it took a long time, but it's finally such a well-deserved honor. And Irene is such a special woman, and her family, they deserve it. They really deserve it. I mean, he deserves it. He should have been in a long time ago.
A long time ago, yes.
Jim Cott.
No, former guest.
Hall of Fame. Hall of Famer, Jim Cott.
Hall of Famer.
25 years in the game. Bob Kendrick. Not in the Hall of Fame, although maybe one day.
Maybe one day, but he, his great friend, Buck O'Neill, finally got his place where he deserved into the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. And Bob is so proud to have him have received that honor. But Buck O'Neill is now in the Hall of Fame. And of course, now Tim Kirchen, who we had on, he received an award from the Hall of Fame. So that's another one.
Yes. Did you know he went to Walter Johnson High School?
Really?
Well, he told us that when we interviewed him.
Okay. But
looking at his bio here, yeah, Walter Johnson High School.
Okay.
In Bethesda, Maryland. How about that?
Who else?
But Farrell got in the Hall of Fame?
Of course.
Minnie Minoso?
Mm-hmm.
Tony Oliva? And
Big
some
Poppy.
Yeah, some guy in Boston. Yeah.
Big Poppy. And so we congratulate all of them, all of the Hall of Famers. They really put in a great class yesterday. They really did. And you know, those plaques are so incredible. The images that they have on those plaques are so good.
Mm-hmm.
They really.
And we did have somebody who was instrumental in writing those plaques, Marty Appel.
Yeah. So we have a lot of ties with the show to this year's Hall of Fame class, and it's very exciting.
Yes, and did you know that for 2023, the new eligible players who are on the ballot, there's only a handful of them. You tell me how many votes they're going to get. I'm going to read you a list. You tell me how many votes they're going to get. Jason Worth.
Hell, his mom might be voting.
Jared Weaver.
Okay. Do I really need to say a number?
Hudson Street.
That's a, that, you know, they got a good pizza place on Hudson Street.
Francisco Rodriguez.
Okay.
Johnny Peralta. These are all first timers. Mike Napoli.
Okay.
John Lackey. Andre Ethier. Now, you know, they make the criteria. Play 10 years in the league.
Right.
You know, they're not on the ineligible list. They're mm-hmm. entitled to be on the ballot. Jacoby Ellsbury.
Okay.
Matt Cain. And the last first time eligible to be on the Hall of Fame ballot, Carlos Beltran.
Oh.
Now that might be a little controversial there.
Yeah, there's going to be some discussion there.
Yes.
Not Carlos Beltran, not suspended for steroids ever.
No, so, but he was the only player mentioned in that cheating scandal. You know, I think that's going to do a lot of damage to him. I don't know if he was I didn't know if he was a slam dunk.
Right.
The truth.
He's not. That's the problem.
Very good player. Very good. You know, all-star several times. Good player. Great player. I'm not 9-time all-star. 1999 American League Rookie of the Year. Played for 20 years. Got one World Series this last year with the Astros. But, you know, there's a movie called Bang the Drum Slowly. Well, he banged the cash train slowly, I guess. Who knows?
Okay, so Jeff, was Carlos Beltran better than Harold Baines? And I'm not expecting you to.
Well, no. That's a rhetorical question, of course.
Yeah. Again, when Harold Baines, and some people would argue, I actually spoke to someone who said, Harold Baines, he's a Hall of Famer, of course. I was very surprised that person said that, but that was their opinion. But when Harold Baines went in the Hall of Fame, he was a really very good player, in my opinion. But it does do something to the bar.
Yeah, and Carlos Beltran played for the Royals, the Astros, the Mets, the Giants, the Cardinals, the Yankees, and the Rangers. 7 teams.
He would have played for the Yankees sooner.
Exactly right. But if he was to get on into the Hall of Fame, does he go on with a hat? Maybe not. I mean, some players don't have hats on them.
Right.
But if he was to go with a baseball cap on, which team would it be?
It would look so funny. Now, follow me here. On this is one of my crazy things. Sesame Street, Oscar the Grouch, when he puts his head up, isn't the trash can like attached to his head?
Yes.
Okay. Carlos Beltran, Hall of Fame plaque, trash can for a hat. the cover is a trash can.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, I think he had the most sustained success with the Mets. I think he was on the team. And if it's 20 years, the longest of he was on that team for 6 years.
He was
and a half
with
years.
The Mets the longest.
Yeah.
Okay.
After the few years, Royals, Cardinals, you know, but for the most part, he was on the Mets.
Right.
I don't know if Mets fans really want him to go in with a Met cap on.
You know what? He's the scapegoat. He really is, because none of the players. If he didn't go into managing, let's say he skipped a year and he didn't go into managing, his name wouldn't have been mentioned.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that. I mean, specifically said Carlos Beltran.
Understood. But, well, I don't know. I just, there's a lot of players on that team that were wrong. Hey, you know what, Jeff? I mean, now we're going to get into this whole Houston Astros scandal, but you talk to other people and all these teams are doing it and it doesn't make it right. But and the way they did, actually, the way they did it was very creative.
Given that for ingenuity, I guess.
You know, I mean, if Carlos Beltran was a slam dunk Hall of Famer, then it'd be a little different. Then you'd know whether this controversy was really stopping him. So now, if he doesn't get in, it's going to be, was it the controversy or was he just not a Hall of Fame worthy player?
Right.
We won't know.
We won't know. And, you know, I know you said that is, you know, tell Harold Baines is and this guy. I guess we use that as a bar, I guess. It's, I guess, the Harold Baines, like the Mendoza line. That's the bar. Is it better than this guy or that?
I guess then people could say, well, the bar was obviously lowered when you had the first five that went in and then anyone after that. But yeah. That's not true. There's players that went in after that were every bit as good as probably some of the originals. I don't know, Jeff. I got to really look at his stats. I never really thought of Carlos Beltran as a Hall of Famer, but he does have some incredible numbers. So,
yeah. You know. All right. I have a hankering for some pizza. What do you think, Len?
I do too. So let's order in. And while we do that, let's get Jerry Belcastro.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings podcast. And if you want a lip-smacking, finger-licking good podcast, then you got to listen to Baseball and BBQ with Len and Jeff. They have the best guests and the best recipes on all the internet. So check it out, Baseball and BBQ.
Baseball and barbecue and pizza fans, you all know barbecue, outdoor cooking, lends itself well to a lot of different foods, a lot of high heat foods, and pizza is no exception. As a matter of fact, if you look lately, you're going to see a lot of different pizza cooking devices for outdoors. Pizza is taking over, and our next guest is hoping that pizza definitely takes over. And as far as he's concerned, I think pizza has taken over, is taking over. And he is with us. Who is he? Jerry Belcastro. And you guys are going to learn about the Pizza Cook-Off Association and so much more. We are so happy to announce that Jerry is joining us on Baseball and Barbecue. Jerry, welcome to Baseball and Barbecue.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Welcome, Jerry. Jerry, I have a question right off the bat. I'm looking at your website, and it says here, according to a Google search, there are 61,269 pizzerias in the U.S. alone. Is that just New York, though?
I bet the vast majority of that's New York. But since I grabbed that stat off Google, I'm sure it's grown exponentially since then. So, but New York's definitely the king city of pizza.
We have Ray's. We have the original Ray's, the famous Ray's. You know, we have an argument of which Ray's is the original one, I guess. Len?
I guess Jerry's not, he's not going to get involved in that argument. He's right. Staying clear. He's like, you could keep your Ray's, okay? it's only, we know Ray Sheehan of Barbecue Buddha. That is our Ray. Yeah. So, Jerry, by the way, I've eaten at basically every single one of those New York pizzerias, and I've got the stomach to prove it, okay? Jerry, we found out about you because you have started the Pizza Cook-Off Association. Competitive cooking has become a huge thing. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what made you decide to start the Pizza Cook-Off Association?
Well, just to give you a little bit of background about myself, I came out of college and my sister and I opened a pizza and sub place here in the little town of McDonough, which is about 35 miles south of Atlanta. We had a monopoly in this town for about 5 years until Pizza Hut and Domino's came in the mid 80s. That's ironically how I've decided to do this. My wife and I started judging barbecue for the Georgia Barbecue Association in 2019. And then getting involved with that, we found out there was a steak cook-off association. That didn't really intrigue me because the steak cook-offs are held in one day versus the barbecue world where it's a two-day event. And I started, you know, I came up with the idea, you know, why not pizza? And then I was watching one night the History Channel Foods of Built America, and the episode had Domino's and Pizza Hut, how they got their start. And that really hit home with me. And that's what sort of pushed me over the edge to do this.
You know, it's interesting. There are certain foods that have say almost like groupies. Barbecue has its shows. Everybody knows all the pitmasters. You know, you say Chris Lilly to someone, they know who that is. Tuffy Stone, they know who that is. They know Bobby Flay and his barbecue brawl, and they know barbecue. Pizza is another one of those where when you talk to people in New York, they have pizza tours. Jeff was saying there are pizza places that are famous. They're extremely well known. There are numerous books written about all the pizza places and in search of the perfect pizza. And you've got Chicago that's known for one type of pizza, and New York is another, and
Detroit,
right. It is interesting that there are certain foods that they become passionate about. Spaghetti and meatballs is not, you don't see people that, you know, it's, or even, I don't know, scrambled eggs, whatever food, but pizza has become like barbecue. A lot of people devoted to it. Why do you think that is?
I just think because there's so many variations of a pizza, and that's going to be the beauty of this association, not downplaying or any of the other associations, but when you cook barbecue and you have certain categories, there's different ways to put different spices and stuff on barbecue. And when you're cooking steak, same way, you could marinate it. You could put different rubs on it, but pizza, you could go so many different directions with pizza. You know, Neapolitan, you could do a certain style of pizza. You could have a contest and just have certain ingredients be on that pizza. You could cook, not to jump ahead, but we cook two rounds of pizza. Everybody that enters cooks one round, and then we select the five finalists, and those finalists cook for the money. And you could have everybody cooking the same pizza to begin with, and then on the finals, you could change it up and say, you know, cook your best one. So that's the beauty of this. You could really, whoever's promoting the event could call the shots and say, we're going to do this style of pizza. That's what's going to make it fun.
Take us through a typical event for the Pizza Cook-Off Association. Does it have to be around pizza? Could it be a Sicilian type of pizza? Does it have to have toppings? Does it not have to have toppings? Take us through a typical event.
Okay. You go through the website and sign up, and just for simplicity's sake, you have 15 cooks. You could cook a round pizza or a square pizza, but it has to be as close to 12 inches as you can. We don't get the tape measures out to measure the pizza, but we have a couple devices. One of my sponsors is called Portion Paddle, and they created a paddle that's 12 inches round or square, and it has indentations on it. So when you slice it, you're getting perfect slices. That's sort of our gauge. But as far as an event goes, the cooks show up that morning. They sign in and they pick a random number, and that's the order they start cooking in. And when the clock goes off, say the timeline in the morning, we'll have a cook's meeting, we'll have a judge's meeting, and then we'll have what's called an ancillary cook, which is something other than pizza, but it has to be Italian. That's one of the rules of my association. And then say 12 o'clock, whoever drew first starts their cook, and then so on down the road, down the line. But those pizzas, when they're done, they're put on a round cardboard circle. They don't cut it. They turn it into the turn-in table. From there, it gets assigned another number, so there's no kind of monkey business. And it goes to the judges' table. They judge on appearance before it gets cut. So that pizza's, you know, they're looking at it, how that cook turned it in. They score on appearance, and then it gets put on that portion paddle. It gets cut evenly, and there's five judges, and there's six slices. And we do that for a purpose. We leave that one slice there just in case after they eat a portion of it, they can go back and reference if they need to. But from there, they judge on four categories, and those are construction, how that pizza is built, it's already judged on appearance. Construction, the crust, we judge separately, just the crust on its own. And then for taste, we calculate the scores. And then, as I mentioned, those five top finalists will cook for the finals. And in the finals, we do it a little differently. We do comparative judging. We notify the five finalists. They all cook at the same time. Those pizzas all turned in and they're all put on the table together. So you have five pizzas sitting there and they're judged against each other. They're not judged against, you know, your best pizza you've eaten. That we judge them against each other. And then we have a fifth category on the finals. It's called overall impression. And that's calculated with a decimal point. So there's no tie.
Yeah. Now, Jerry, you mentioned that you have an ancillary category, has to be Italian. So I can't enter my grandmother's matzo ball soup. It's off limits. That's not a possibility, is what I'm understanding.
We might bend the rules for you a little bit there.
Thank you. Thank you. See, Jeff, having a podcast does have privileges.
Right. When it comes to cooking the pizza, I've noticed in the rules you can use the pizza ovens that they can either bring or I think might be provided, but they also can use a smoker or a grill or a gas grill, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we want to really open this up to anybody and everybody that your backyard cook that thinks they cook a good pizza. So yes, in my judges' classes, I conduct them on my back deck. I have a gas oven, natural gas, that I put a pizza stone on, and I use the same pizza dough and I cook a pizza on the gas oven. I cook one on my smoker and then I cook the same dough on my pizza oven. And it just gives those judges really opens their eyes because that pizza crust tastes very different from each oven. So basically I'm opening them rules to where, hey, cook your best pizza and cook it on the device you think makes your best pizza.
So Jerry, when we were kids growing up, and I'm going to put you in this category, at least here in New York, there was Sicilian and there was regular, and that was it. You know, the toppings, you had your pepperoni, mushroom, you know, your sausage, meatball, those things, right? Now, of course, pizza, you go in a pizza parlor and it's, you know, shelves of whether it's salad pizza, white pizza, grandma pizza, you know, it's unbelievable all the types of pizza. Are you putting restrictions on it, or can I enter a white pizza or a grandma's pie and somebody else enters, you know, Neapolitan or something? Is there any restriction on the type of pizza that we can cook, or does that depend on the contest?
Yeah, exactly. That depends on the contest. But for our first event, we let that be wide open. Mm-hmm. So okay. anything that you presented was admissible. In my judges class, I really try to give all those judges. We go over different materials for the different pizzas you mentioned. Neapolitan, we look at Detroit, we look at Chicago, we look at New York style, we look at a St. Louis, you know, is a thin, like a wafer thin crust cut into squares, you know, the white pizza. Even though, and then there could be some pizzas that really don't have a certain style. You have some cooks, you know, that they if they weren't in the restaurant business or trained in cooking pizza, and they just come up with a barbecue, you know, with pork and barbecue sauces as your sauce. Hey, you know, go for it. You know, that's what we're looking for. We're looking for creativity and taste. So the judges break down those categories. So no matter what pizza you turn in, they're judging accordingly.
Is there a time limit to cook the pizza? I mean, do you give the contestants, I don't know. I know when I go into a pizza joint or pizza shop, you know, they cook it right in those ovens and it's ready in 20 minutes or whatever it is. Giving it, it's on different devices in the contest, be it a pizza oven or a grill or something. Is there like a time limit that you give to turn in the pizza?
Yes. It's going to depend from event to event and on how many cooks we have at each event. So say we're upwards of 30 cooks, we'll do that in half hour time slot. So when they pick those random numbers and you're, you know, 1 through 10, then you're going to have a 30 minute time limit to get your pizza turned in. And then it'll break down, you know, it's in increments of 30 minutes.
Right. But that would prevent the, all the pizzas that being cooked later. They would have the around. Same. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. We're trying to avoid get those pizzas put, you know, move through there where they're not sitting for any prolonged period of time. That's our goal. We're just starting off and you know, we'll tweak that as we go along, but
right.
That's the idea behind it right now.
Yeah. That's what I thought when I'm looking at all the rules online, which is terrific. You've got such a great website. Jeff, what's their website?
Pizzacook-off.com.
Yeah. And it's a great website. Gives the rules. And one of the rules that I saw was that the dough cannot be made on site. So you have to bring the dough with you to the cook-off.
Correct.
What the reason is for that?
Well, most people that make their own dough knows it goes through a fermenting process. And you're not going to find too many people that can make dough on the fly like that. That's going to be a winner. I'll put it that way. Your dough, there's people that have a 3-day fermenting process. They make it 3 days ahead. Some people make it 2 days ahead. A lot of, you know, restaurants just for time or space sake, you know, they make it for 1 day fermenting process. So we just want to avoid, you know, people bringing out mixers and more equipment than they really need to try to even make that dough the same day. But that's, if they know anything about pizza, they'll make that pizza the day before or not the same day.
Now, this is an audio podcast, but just to tell our audience behind you there, a banner with the Pizza Cook-Off Association and your sponsors, Alpha Ovens and Fire Within. And looks like Carolina Cookwood is also on there. And Gozeni, is that how to pronounce that right?
It's pronounced Gozeni.
Gozeni. And what you mentioned here earlier, Portion Panel. So they must be big supporters of you, obviously. So tell us about how they got involved.
Well, when I started this, my main goal for my members was to try to give them pizza ovens at different price points. And Fire Within, being the highest price point company there, their ovens are like they're the Cadillacs of the, so to speak, of the pizza ovens. They range anywhere from 18,000 to 30,000. They're already mounted on a trailer. They got this Italian ceramic tile on them. Some of them have a sink on there. So the top of the line. And then Alpha is middle of the line. They start, their smallest oven starts around $1,200 and they go up to about $10,000. The Gozeni being the smallest oven, 30 or I want to say 42 pounds, I think it weighs, very portable. And those I think start at $400 or $500. Alpha being my main sponsor, I reached out to them when I was putting my website together and sent them an email just explaining to what I wanted to do and my idea. And within 30 minutes, I got a response back and they told me we knew it would just be a matter of time before somebody did this and we'd love to partner with you. So they've been in it since day one. They have provided me some ovens. And you mentioned earlier in my rules, they gave me 3 ovens and I have the option to take these ovens to different events and let some cooks use those if need be. The goal in the long run is for everybody to own their own oven, but just to get this thing kicked off, it just opens it up a little bit more to have some ovens if possible at different events.
Now on your website, I just want everybody to know there's links to these companies and I clicked on Alpha and it looks like an amazing oven, I should say. You know, looks like wood burning. Is that how it is, or is it gas? Was it?
Yeah, they have both.
They have both.
Yeah, they have both. You got an option for either one.
So now I want to cook in one of these competitions. You're new, so we're in New York. At this point, I'm not finding one near me, right? That's going to be future. is the goal, I'm sure, is to be all over the country, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes. And how it's going to grow is to get somebody interested to be a rep. That's just okay. an extension of me. They would just contact me. I would basically get them into a judging class, get them acquainted with all the rules and know the rules inside and out. And then they would sort of get a pool of judges together in your area. And I would come up and conduct a judges class, probably a minimum of 10 to 15 judges. And from there, then that's how, you know, then you find somebody to have an event. And that's really all it takes. You have some certified judges, and we basically, that rep and myself, you know, to get this thing kicked off, we'll meet with whoever wants to promote that event, go through all those rules and make it happen. So that's how it's going to grow.
And then I want to cook in this contest. I'll know in advance if there's going to be a pizza oven there, or is it best that I bring my own? Which would you recommend?
It's best to bring your own, and I'm going to tell you why. It's really hard trying. It's not hard, but if you have your own oven and you're practicing on it, you're going to know, just like a grill when you're cooking, you know, your steak. You're going to know the hot spots, and you're going to know how that oven performs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really, really to your advantage to have your own oven. But we're going to do our best to, you know, to try to get some ovens out there and get more people to compete. And that way, once this does catch on, I'm sure people want to go out and buy their own ovens and really practice and perfect it.
On your website, it has the membership levels. There's a couple of levels. And to be a judge, you have to be a member of the Pizza Cook-Off Association. So my first question is, well, I guess I just answered my first question to be a judge, but about how many members do you have at this time?
Right now, I just had my 75th member this week, and we have 34 certified judges already certified.
That's pretty good. Yeah. Almost half are judges.
And you started this just a couple of years ago, correct?
No, actually went live last June.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Not bad.
A little over a year.
Not bad. You know, it is a great thing. The State Cook-Off Association, they found, you know, people like to just go in that day, be done. The same with the pizza. You're right. You're not there a whole weekend. You can go in, you could cook your pizza. The prize money that is, you're not going to, you know, it's not baseball money, Jeff, but.
one day.
But it's what he used to earn. It's what they earned back in, you know.
So,
in the 50s.
Jerry, tell us about the how to qualify for the Pizza Cook-Off Association National Championship.
Okay, so we haven't determined when that national championship will be. Of course, we got to get a number of events under our belt first. But the winner of each event is automatically qualified for that championship. And then we're going to do a points chase similar to what the steak people do. And barbecue folks, for that matter. If you come in second, you get 8 points. If you come in third, you know, you get 6 points. So those records are kept, and the top five will also compete every year. So we got one under our belt so far. We have our second event coming up August the 26th in Opelika, Alabama. We have another one on the books for November. I haven't posted that one yet, but that's in the works. And I'm in the talks with a couple promoters, and hopefully, if all things go well, I can't really let the cat out of the bag yet, but hopefully 14 or 15 more events next year. So
nice.
Maybe by this time next year, and we want to do it in the fall, you know, October time frame, months where it's not quite as, you know, hot, and have that national championship.
All right. So Jerry, we're going to, We talked about, we know you're a big baseball fan. We know you're an Atlanta Braves fan, but I have two questions, pizza related and baseball related. So Jeff, let me ask these questions. All right. Thank you. The first, we know that the hot dog is at a baseball game It's, you know, it's the number one food, at least that's historically, you know, everyone talks about hot dogs at baseball games. What's it going to take for a slice of pizza to become more popular than a hot dog at a baseball game? When's that going to happen, Jerry?
That's a hard one. That's a really hard one.
Tough ones.
I'm a traditionalist, so that hot dog's going to be very, very hard to replace with pizza. But I just think, you know, let this thing kick off for a few years and let more people, once people start cooking pizza themselves, they're more aware of what goes into make one. They're more aware of taste and quality. And who knows? I mean, you get some of these, you know, top places like, and I could relate to Permane Brothers, for example, in Pittsburgh. They have the famous Permane Brothers sandwich. So that stadium has that restaurant inside that stadium. You know, if different stadiums, you know, take on different popular pizza places in that city, who knows, one day. But I think that's going to be in a very far future.
All right. So here's number two. All right. Because I think I figured out how it's going to be like the fly. It's going to be Brundle fly. What about a slice of pizza that's topped with hot dogs and maybe even hot dog fixins? So you're taking the slice, and instead of pepperoni, we're slicing up some hot dogs on top of it.
Boy, I'll tell you, you couldn't ask that question in a better time. But today's Monday, so Saturday, my wife came up with a hot dog pizza.
I can't believe it.
She topped it. We put the pizza in the oven. We slightly cooked it, took it out, put chili for the base.
There you go.
She cut up some onions. We grilled some hot dogs, put the hot dogs on there, and then put some cheese on it and finished it off. It was delicious.
Wow.
Wait a minute. Okay. I want in on that, Jerry. Okay. I don't want to. It was my idea. I don't know how she stole my idea, but I want some credit there. I just feel like, no, that's terrific.
You guys are in cahoots, I think.
Exactly.
Jerry, I think you should have that National Pizza Championship held at Truist Park and have it in September. This way you can get to feed all the Braves a lot of pizza. This way, when it's time to play the Mets, they'll be full and they won't be able to move so much.
Jeff's thinking how to sabotage the Braves.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So we'll turn it to baseball. You're a Braves fan and we're Mets fans. I think it's going to come down to the wire.
It really is. But you guys, when DeGrom's back, I really think, you know, that team's really going to get a boost from that. Definitely one of the best pitchers in baseball. Top three in my book. When he's on, I don't think there's a better pitcher around. And then you got Scherzer. So your rotation definitely looks better than ours. We got some hitters, though, and you know, they've been there. And it really is going to come down to the wire. I think if you guys beat us out and win the division, I think we'll be there for a wild card. And then who knows what could happen from there like it did last year.
Exactly. I mean, the Mets had a double-digit lead, and they didn't play bad. I mean, they had no long losing streak, but those Braves had that, 12, 14-game winning streak that just, wow, you know, they couldn't lose for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that was incredible. We started out the year ho-hum again, and all the talk down here was, are they ever going to put it together? They pretty much had the same makeup as they did last year, but and then they finally put that run together starting in June, and it's been incredible since then. So, yeah, pretty much neck and neck right now. And I know we got a lot of games head to head, and I actually got tickets to one of those games in mid-August here. So,
yeah,
looking forward to that one.
Well, you know, I just read in today's paper. No, actually, it wasn't in the paper. It was on Twitter a little while ago at the doubleheader at Citi Field on August 6th. The two pitches the Mets are going to throw is Max Scherzer and Jacob DeGrom.
Wow. Yeah, that's going to be a day.
Yeah, but the Braves had pretty good pitching, too. I mean, this Max Fried is he's a good pitcher. He's really good.
He is. But like I said, I think you guys got us a little bit in the pitching column there for starting pitching, we got a couple young guys there that we're sort of counting on, but a little iffy, but good bullpen, and we got some pretty good hitters.
Well, if Michael Soroka comes back this year, that's going to be a formidable team too. So,
yeah, we're sort of crossing our fingers on Mike because, you know, he's been out for a couple years, and if he can come back anywhere near where he was, we'll be lucky.
We're kind of crossing our fingers on Jacob DeGrom. I mean, that's just, you said August 6th. I'm guessing, is that going to be his first appearance?
Yep.
That he's coming back. So that might be a day to get him because it'll be his first day back.
He's sharp. He'll be sharp.
Yeah. No, but the Braves, look, the Braves are the world champions. And I mean, the Mets seriously are playing amazing baseball. And I'm not going to, if I say how many games it separates them, then everybody will know when we recorded this. And then, you know, but they're very close at this point. Let's just put it that way.
It's going to be close for the rest of the season. That's
down the stretch. Yeah. It is. You know, but whatever team emerges from this is going to be, as they say, stronger for it.
Yeah, what really impressed me the last time we played you guys was you had so many people out of the lineup. And basically, I mean, there was some names in there, you know, that I haven't heard of. And you guys beat us 2 out of 3. So that says a lot for your team there. We pretty much had our full lineup. And even without Scherzer and DeGrom, and we lost 2 out of 3. So got to hand it to you.
Jeff, don't you like that? He's not a cocky Atlanta Braves fan. I don't know. You know, I don't really know if Atlanta Braves fans are even cocky. They're not, you know, they just kind of, they know they're good and they don't need to.
Yeah, you know, the Braves are a tough team to dislike. You know, they are.
They really are.
Even it's hated Freddie Freeman. I'm like, I love Freddie Freeman, you know, because he always killed us, but it's hard to hate Freddie Freeman. I can't believe he's on the Dodgers now, but that's another story.
Yeah, Jerry, sure you're probably not too thrilled about that.
No, not at all.
And you have our catcher, you know.
Yep.
He becomes an all-star with you guys.
Of course.
Man. he's really been a really solid guy behind the plate there.
Yeah. And also, I mean, now we're talking current Braves, but as a Braves fan, you've had some, you talk about our pitching staff. The Braves have had some of the best pitchers, you know, there have been, you know, between Glavin and Maddox and Schmaltz and Schmaltz. I'm saying it like I'm thinking matzo ball soup, Schmaltz and Schmaltz. And I mean, just on and on. You always have been the Atlanta Braves from the moment they came into the Mets division have been a thorn in our side.
Yeah, that run back in the 90s with those three pitchers was incredible. And, you know, we should have had a few more titles than we did, but it was really, really great to watch. I was fortunate to go to a lot of games back then and got to see a lot of those pitchers and all of baseball too, you know.
Yeah.
Something else.
Yeah, no, that was. And we are – extremely happy that you came on with us. How do people get more involved in the Pizza Cook-Off Association?
Go to the website. You just put in the Google Pizza Cook-Off Association and it'll come up first thing on Google. Go to the website and sign up for my newsletter. When you get on my newsletter, I keep that. I probably post 3 or 4 different times a month and just keep people current on all the events coming and what's coming up. And that's the best way. I'm also on Facebook. There's a page for Pizza Cook-Off Association on Facebook. Go there. Like I said, I'm getting ready to sort of create a little partnership with somebody, a promoter. And hopefully, like I said, we're going to have a bunch of events coming up next year and hopefully 3 or 4 more this year. But that newsletter will definitely, keep you posted on everything.
Oh, and there was, Jerry, there was one other thing that I was in the process of wrapping this up, but I have to ask you one other thing.
All right.
When you get these people that are coming in just as spectators, I saw something where the spectators can partake in some of the pizza from some of the teams. How does that work?
We're going to try to accomplish, and this really was one of the things when we got involved with barbecue and come to find out in the steak world that when you go to one of these events, the public cannot eat or taste any of the food there. And the barbecue world, the cooks, you know, they cook and turn all that food into the judges, but there's nothing there for the public. Same thing for the steak. So what I wanted to try to do different, and this isn't going to work everywhere, and it's going to be based on where it's at, the health department for that particular region is going to play a big part in that. But we're going to try to get the cooks to cook at least one extra pizza, and they turn that into the promoter, and the promoter has the ability to do pretty much whatever they want to with it. And what I mean by that is they could have a People's Choice Award. That's one way to sort of not get around, but it's one way to sort of skirt the health department rules, because you're not selling pizza. You're selling a ticket to vote on the best pizza. Mm-hmm. So we want those cooks to turn in at least one. And if they, you know, if they're practicing, they can cook, they could turn in more, but we want to try to get that good relationship with whoever's promoting that event and work with them before that event to make that happen. And when we did it, our first event, the cooks cooked extra pizza, and we didn't have a People's Choice, but we gave it away. And we also brought a local pizza place in to sell some slices. Cause we, you know, if you're going to look at people cook pizza and you're going to smell it, and you want to be able to, you know, at least have a slice of pizza. So
of course
we're going to try to make that happen at our events the best way we can. And that's just going to depend on where that event's located at.
Well, Jerry, we thank you for joining us again. The website is pizzacook-off.com, and I'm just looking at it right now. And one of the fun things I like about it is the pizza fun facts. I suggest everybody check that out. Super Bowl Sunday is the most popular pizza day of the year. 70% of those watching the game eat at least one slice. And I can tell you from personal experience, I've had more than my share of slices. So, well, thank you, Jerry. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Jerry, thank you. We wish you a lot of success.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Very good. Jerry, I give both Jerry and Justin a big wow. I thank them for joining us. Jerry has really tapped into something. And I think that, you know, with competitive cooking the way it is now, there's no reason to believe that the pizza cook-off won't become a big event in a lot of different cities.
Maybe they'll have a competitive pizza eating contest.
I'd like to be in that.
And Joey Chestnut would win that.
Yeah, Joey Chestnut would definitely win that. And I want that pizza that I created with the hot dogs and the chili and stuff. I don't know how his wife read my mind, but, and you know what, Jeff, we were talking about Carlos Beltran. I would like to know what the listeners think. So please, I know you already gave this information, but give it one more time, please. And I would like to know, is Carlos Beltran a Hall of Famer? And by the way, when I ask, is Carlos Beltran a Hall of Famer? I don't mean, is he a first ballot Hall of Famer or, you know, the 10th time on the ballot? In my opinion, if a guy's a Hall of Famer, he's a Hall of Famer. Doesn't matter first ballot. Okay. Yeah.
Give us a call, 516-855-8214, or email us baseballandbbq@gmail.com.
And let me just tell everybody to please visit barbecuebuddha.com for Ray Sheehan's amazing sauces, rubs, cookbooks. It's all there for you to order. It's so simple. It comes, I've ordered from there. The box, you would think they were shipping gold. Actually, that you'd think they were shipping a pitcher that gets hurt all the time. So they put them in bubble wrap, because these bottles are wrapped in bubble wrap, and such a great thing how they wrap it and everything. So barbecuebuddha.com, our friend Ray Sheehan And then, of course, baseballbbq.com for grilling tools and accessories. Check them out. It's never too late. Please know, everybody, that episode 144 is brought to you by Bet Online, where the game starts.
I guess that will wrap it up for episode 144.
Wrap it up. I'll take it.
Okay.
We just want to say thank you to all our listeners. And we want to end this with the poet, Shel Krakowski, the musician, Dave Dresser, and their song, Baseball Always Brings You Home. And we'll see you on episode 145.
See you next week, Leonard.